Hi Christine, thanks very much for taking the time to meet me today and do this interview. The presentation you did at the Employer Relations Forum went down really well, so I'm glad we've got this opportunity. In your talk, you said that even very skilled and experienced job applicants need to word their CVs very carefully if they have a trans background. Where do transsexual people's experiences and needs fit among the other diversity issues?
Well, I think it's very important to realise actually that trans people are effectively a seventh strand as far as equality and diversity issues are concerned. I quote the example of a situation about 2 or 3 years ago when I attended a conference at the DTI in the early stages of the development of the Commission for Equality and Human Rights. And there were breakout sessions for women, there were breakout sections for gay and lesbian people, and of course all the other streams as well. But I really had to ask myself, which one of these should I attend? Because if I attend the women's issues one, it felt actually a little bit unfair then to stand up and talk a lot about trans women's issues and trans men's issues, because that wouldn't address the reasons why most of the people were there. Equally, although many trans people do identify as gay and lesbian as well in their new roles, it wasn't appropriate to go to the gay and lesbian stream as well. So in the end, I went to the women's stream and we talked about women's issues because those are important to me as well. But that's the problem. Unless you identify trans issues as being in some cases distinct, then you risk actually missing those for quite a large population of people.
So do you think there's a very negative impression of trans people among employers? And if so, how's that come about?
I don't think we should label it as being employers specifically. I think it's just because employers are members of the public just like you and me. The problems have come about, I think, because of 30 to 40 years worth of press treatment, which has unfortunately been rather negative. In my presentation, I showed some examples of headlines just in the last 10 years in all of the newspapers. And there's one from The Sun, for instance, which was particularly sticks in memory of No Knobby Bobby Keeps Jobby. They love alliteration. The serious side of that is that, in fact, shortly after that headline was published, the No Knobby Bobby did lose her jobby. She was a firearms expert in the Staffordshire Police. They attempted to accommodate her transition at work, but the way in which they did it wasn't very successful, and they didn't really want to make it work, I don't think. And as a result of that, shortly afterwards, they concluded that she wasn't fit to work and therefore she lost her job. And now she drives taxis for a living instead. So that's the loss of a tremendous amount of skill, unfortunately. But I wouldn't like to give the impression that it's only tabloids who indulge in this type of thing. The broadsheets over the years have been highly irresponsible too. As I cited in my slides, an example of a headline from The Independent, The Secret Life of Cynthia Watson. Now, Cynthia Watson's reason for coming to attention was the fact that she died and that she'd left a very large sum of money to the Royal National Lifeboat Institute. Now, you'd think you actually write about the fact that she'd actually been very generous in her will, but in fact, the focus of that article was about the fact that she was a trans woman and the villages where she'd lived didn't know that. So even when you've died, you can actually find yourself being pursued. So that's the sort of problem. And then there are headlines like Man Sect for Change of Sex, Evangelist Seeks Sex Change Van. There's been a constant drip, as I say, for 30 or 40 years, which plants the impression that being trans is problematic. And in fact, the only thing that's problematic about being trans is people's attitudes. You take those away and there's no big deal.
Christine, at the presentation in Wakefield, you spoke about trans woman Lynn from America. Could you tell me a bit more about her?
That's right. Well, Lynn Conway is Emerita Professor of Electrical Engineering at the University of Michigan, a very senior role. And I think we all owe her an enormous debt of gratitude, because if it wasn't for her capabilities as an engineer and as a scientist, we wouldn't have microelectronics as we know it today. It just would be too expensive to develop. What she did was to develop the techniques for being able to produce lots of different kinds of microchips very economically, and that's the reason why you now find them in everything from computers to toasters. At the time she was doing that sort of contributory work, she was known as a man. She worked for IBM, and in fact for them she'd also made enormous contributions to the way in which very fast computers are designed. But when she needed to transition, that is, go from being a man to a woman, in 1969, IBM just couldn't handle that, unfortunately, and she was out the door so fast her feet didn't touch the ground. In fact, ironically, they were in such a hurry to get rid of her that they didn't even ask for her research papers back. So I think that's an example of the sort of problems that occur. And for Lynn, actually, it's a very... it's a story that really... actually warms my heart very much, because what she did was then she went away, she completed her change of gender, and then she came back and she started all over again, completely from scratch. She got a job as a contract programmer and she worked up from there, simply on the basis of her pure skills. Within 4 or 5 years she was invited to join a very exciting team in those days in the early 70s, which was sponsored by Xerox, a so-called Palo Alto Research Center, which is the place where all the things we now take for granted, Windows, icons, mice, pull-down menus, all the things that make modern computing, were invented. It's a very hothouse atmosphere. And there she teamed up with another scientist, and they published a book, which is still the Bible, which is taught to young engineers at universities and colleges for how to design microelectronics. She's made a tremendous contribution to Orthoveld, but for most of that time, in fact, until about 1999, she kept her past under her hat. She couldn't tell that she couldn't own her earlier contributions to IBM, because to do so would have been exposing her transsexual past and still leaving her open to discrimination and probably losing her job. So many trans women and trans men for the last 40 or 50 years have learned really to actually lie low and to hide within society, which is actually really the reason why perhaps members of the public don't very often associate trans people with being very successful, because when trans people are very successful, they don't go around saying, hey, I'm a trans person.
Yeah, I mean, that's a shame, because both yourself and Lynn are clearly very articulate professional women. Is that the image you'd prefer for people to think of when they think of trans people?
Yes, indeed. I mean, it's important to stress that trans people are themselves very diverse. You have people working in all sorts of areas. I mean, some of the examples I showed in the presentation, for instance, Georgina Beyer is an MP in the New Zealand Parliament. I showed another example of somebody who's a general practitioner, as a professional golfer. A steel worker, musicians, lawyers. In fact, we're everywhere, really, but we're just very well hidden.
Yeah. You referred to several pieces of protective legislation in your talk. Could you just recap on what those are, please?
Yes, there's been quite a lot of legislation over the last 10 years. The first and most important one from the point of view of people's security in society, I think, was the Sex Discrimination Gender Reassignment Regulations, which extended the Sex Discrimination Act in 1999. And the effect of those regulations was to provide protection against discrimination in both work and vocational education for trans people from the moment that they are intending to undergo a transition from one sex to the other. It protects those who are planning to undergo, are undergoing, or have undergone gender reassignment. And that's very important, of course, because if you don't have that type of protection, then nothing else works, because if you stand the risk always of losing your job at a moment's notice without any redress, then you really don't have any security within society. But that's not the only legislation that's had to come along. Around about the same time, a group of three trans women took their local health authority to court, Northwest Lancs Health Authority, and established a very important principle that treatment for transsexual people is validly covered under the NHS, and that it's against the law to effectively have a policy that rules out on a blanket basis that treatment. And obviously that's very important for people to be able to express who they are and to be able to move forwards in life. And then, of course, the legislation that people have probably now heard about from 2004, the Gender Recognition Act, is really the icing on the cake. That provides a couple of very important provisions. The first is that it enables any trans person who meets the criteria, and they're fairly basic, straightforward criteria of having lived and intending to live for the rest of their lives in the gender role that they've transitioned to, and meeting some other simple criteria. Having met those criteria, they can then have their new gender recognised for all purposes in law. So that's for contract law, criminal law, civil law, whatever. And that clears up an enormous number of grey areas which have always hung over people. And the classic example was, what was a trans person to do if they're applying for something as simple and basic as car insurance? Because things like that are gender-based. And there was always the risk that, well, if you didn't actually say to the person who was providing the insurance quote, hey, by the way, I'm not what I seem in law, then you could find that you had insurance that simply didn't deliver when you actually needed it. And I always thought that the people who actually potentially lost out on that were not just the trans person, but if, say, for instance, heaven forbid, I was to knock somebody over in my car, well, if my insurance wasn't valid because of that loophole, then the person who was going to miss out was the person who wanted to sue me for everything I was worth. So these things are very important. Also, the Gender Recognition Act provides for very strong protection of a trans person's privacy. The fact of having undergone gender reassignment becomes what is known within the Act as protected information. And anybody coming into possession of that information, that's very, very often employers, needs to be aware of that, because it becomes a criminal offence with a very substantial fine attached for passing that information on to any third party without permission. And that means that when somebody transitions, also companies as providers of services need to make sure that their records are properly updated, and that information which might cause that information to fall into somebody else's hands unintentionally is purged from their records as well. It's all about really protecting people's privacy. Why do we want to protect people's privacy? Simply because if we don't, we know from experience that discrimination still unfortunately happens. We'd prefer there to be a world where people aren't discriminated against, but unfortunately that isn't the case yet.
Yeah. Let's end on a happier note. Your final slide in the presentation, which listeners can download and have a look at, is perhaps a bit unusual. It's a wedding photo. Why did you pick that one?
I think it's important to actually keep our feet on the ground whenever we look at equality and diversity issues. We often present this from the point of view of a strategic imperative to employers to employ the best people and be able to retain the best talents that they've perhaps expensively developed as well. But actually, why do all of us go to work? Well, there is a pleasure in doing a job that you really enjoy, but there's actually a more important social dimension as well. Because unless people can take part fully within society, and that includes having a job, being paid, paying taxes, being able to spend within the economy, being able to build families, be part of a community, unless you've got those things, then you're really leaving out a large slice of society. So I was very excited when my colleague Stephen Whittle and his family, he was able to marry his partner at last a few weeks ago because of the Gender Recognition Act, and because of the fact that he, as a trans man, was now recognised as a man and could marry his female partner. They've waited 26 years for the event, and it was a very emotional event when it occurred. So it's a reminder that when you're talking about how do we accommodate, for instance, trans people within our business, what are we doing? We're simply enabling people who want to be a part of society, like all the rest of us, to do that and to contribute all their experiences to whatever we're doing.
I think that's a great message to end with, Christine. Thanks very much for taking part in this interview.